You are listening to a sermon by Troy Terpstra, recorded on Sunday, February 15th, 2015, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
It's great to be back here. I'm glad I'm on time, actually, because your website says start at 10:30. And I was like, oh, I thought it was 10. I'll just, you know, maybe I'll just show up a half hour early anyway. So great. So I'm here. I went down to the basement, and just like, oh, they're playing the same song over and over again. Maybe they started without me. So I'm very glad I'm here. Let's see, this is a very rich set of scriptures that we just have heard this morning. And it's a little bit intimidating because I feel like there's so much here that I'm worried I'm going to miss something. But I'm also glad because I know we still have this time where we get to kind of chat, right, afterwards. So you can take me to task or whatever after I'm done. But let's look again at these scriptures, okay? In Mark, we have this image of the Transfiguration. This is like a very, very dramatic event, obviously. This is this event in a gospel of God's total identification with Jesus, right? Jesus becomes radiant. There's a wonderful line in a theologian, Hans Urs von Balthasar, who, in talking about Jesus becoming this, being revealed as this God's revelation in this moment, that the light is not shining down on Jesus, but rather it's radiating forth from Jesus' interior. It's coming out. This is God totally identified with the person of Jesus Christ at this moment. So we look at the passage in 2 Corinthians. This God, the God who has called light from darkness, the Creator God, has shown, what is the line? It's lovely. Who has shown in our hearts to give the light of knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Now, last time I came here, what I talked about was, I don't know if you recall, but it was about imitation and mediated desire. So we talked a lot about craftsmanship, apprenticeship, learning through imitating a master, sort of in carpentry, in painting, in all things in life. I would argue we get our desires, we get who we are, we become who we are through others. This is how God has made us. And that was the sort of gist of what I was saying, right? An example of that might be a child will understand who they are, obviously, by their family. And a child will also only understand how they belong to God. We explain it to a child, you are God's child, like you are mine. So our identity comes very, very strongly through existing in this relationship with one another. This is how we have personhood, in fact. So, why is this the case? It's the case because we are made in the image of God, but the God in whose image we are made is a Trinitarian God. The God in whose image we are made is a God who, in God's self, in the Trinity, right, is in relationship. Inside of God's being, this is such a fascinating and strange concept, but inside God's being, God is in relationship. And we are made in the image of this God, and so we ourselves, in our being, we only have being in as much as we are in relationship. Now, it's significant here that Jesus is in this moment of becoming the kind of icon, as Paul calls him, the image of how we are to perceive the eternal, creator God. Jesus stands with Moses and Elijah. And we always interpret this as this is the law and the prophets testifying to Jesus as the sort of culmination of biblical revelation, right? But there's another aspect to this also, which is that Moses and Elijah are two characters in the Old Testament who have had the most dramatic encounter with the eternal God. The sort of Moses on top of Mount Sinai, Moses' face, you remember when he comes down, his face is glowing because he has been totally confronted with the eternal, and it shines off of his own face. This is an encounter that terrifies the Israelites. They don't want anything to do with it. And also we see here in the passage we just read in Kings, Elijah taken up, right with the eternal, taken up in this moment. Right? So, in this physical, direct, face-to-face, Holy of Holies encounter that for the Jewish mindset is so radical and so other that it's not even necessarily desired. And here what's happening is this God is coming to us in this moment and giving each of us the opportunity to sort of have this beatific vision, this sort of face-to-face encounter with him in the person of Jesus Christ. I think, well, first of all, last time I came here, I was told that my message was funny. This isn't very funny, I realize. I'm not apologizing for that. I feel like this is serious, like this is a big deal to me, and this is, so I'm not trying to be, all week I've been up on this improv stage making terrible jokes. I feel very excited to be here and to be thinking about this with you guys. I just feel like I need to say that for myself, maybe. I feel like this is so much more rich to me than, I don't know, being silly. I don't know, it's exciting, I feel like, even as I stand here, I feel like it's exciting to think about this as this God who has done so much to try to come to each of us and to give us this encounter with him. It's fascinating to look at, in this moment of God revealing himself as the icon to humanity, God revealing himself in Christ as the one to whom we look to know the eternal. It's fascinating to look at Peter's reaction. Peter always has the best, most wonderful sort of instructive, helpful, mistaken reactions to things. God bless Peter for it. But to put it in context, look at the story right before this, okay? In the center of Mark's gospel, you have two stories back to back, both of which Peter sort of reacts to completely in the wrong way. Yeah? Right before this is when Jesus says to his disciples, you know, I'm going to have to be crucified, I'm going to have to be tortured, I'm going to have to suffer these things in order to come into my glory. And Peter takes him aside and he says, you know, no, this is, you don't have to do this, Lord. And Peter, it says, rebukes him. And Jesus at this point gives his strongest sort of no in the whole New Testament. He says, get behind me, Satan. Right? In this moment. Peter, you haven't understood what this is about. Peter, you're suffering under the illusion that there is a comfortable victory available to us. That somehow Peter thinks Jesus' project is going to be able to get through it without having to undergo the cross. Right? Likewise, the transfiguration, the radiant vision of God, Peter's terrified. And I think he even says, he's sort of babbling. Look, I'll make you some tents. Let's make some tents, let's make some houses. Let's possess this. Let's keep this. Let's guard this. Let's sort of contain this glory. Jesus doesn't say anything. He just ignores him this time. He doesn't say, get behind me. But still, it's clear that Peter has sort of quite instructively missed the point of what this is about. That this is not, when you are face to face with the beloved, when you are face to face with the eternal, this is not a moment to have anxiety about being able to possess and keep this. This is being in a relationship. If you're with your beloved and you're worried, you can't even enjoy the presence of the beloved because you're anxious to sort of make sure that you have it and can control it and can keep it. So Peter has misunderstood the idea of the cross, and he has misunderstood this transfiguration. And they're so unique, they're so linked at the center of Mark's gospel, the center of sort of, Eugene Peterson calls this is the moment of the sort of center of Christian spirituality. Because what's going on here is that you have to have the cross to have the glory. Christ has come, God has sent Christ to be crucified, to die for our sins, to give us salvation, to give us redemption, so that we might enter into relationship with God more fully. This holy, distant, other God has done this, has died, has come here, so that we can finally look at him face to face, so that we can finally have access, so that we can finally have personhood. We can know who we are by looking into the face of Christ. And in that sense, this is for us also a moment of transfiguration. This is for us also a moment to see the God in whose image we are made, and in so doing, to have a sort of idea of what we are supposed to try to become. Right? Imitators of Christ. There's this Old Testament in 2 Samuel 7, where David also thinks, David kind of makes this same mistake that Peter makes. David says he's going to build a house for God. And through the prophet Nathan, God says, no, David, you're not. I'm going to build you a house. I'm going to come to you. I'm going to be the one that does this. You are not the one that possesses me. I am the one that comes to you. I am the one that comes out towards you. Right? So it's a wonderful little echo here. I think for me this is so powerful because this moment of the face of Christ, this as Paul says, the face of Christ revealing God's glory to us. The face of Christ revealing the eternal one in this human form, in this accessible one who comes to us, who wants to be in relationship with us. In Matthew 25, Jesus teaching, Jesus saying, when you fed the least of these, when you gave the thirsty a glass of water, when you visited me when I was sick, you did this to me. That is to say, this holy, glorious God embodied in the radiant face of Christ is something we are supposed to seek out in the faces of one another. Which isn't to say we see one another as, you know, worship one another. We see one another as our brothers and sisters in themselves. Yet, in an incredible way, we also see and are called to see God in the face of the other. And we are called to become what we are through the other. And there is just a sort of incredible, I don't know how to say it exactly, but there's an incredible sort of, Jesus says in John 5, truly I say to you, the Son can do nothing of his own accord, but only what he sees the Father doing. The Father says on the top of the mountain, this is my beloved, listen to him. Right? We're going back and forth. This is my beloved, listen to him. I can do nothing except for what I see the Father doing. Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Right? We all have pastors, we all have parents, we all have mentors, we all have people who we have loved, who were Christians. That's why we're in this room. A Christian is a person who's met another Christian, right? A Christian is a person who's encountered a Christian, and that Christian's somehow impacted their life greatly. We're all sort of aiming back towards Christ, towards this moment, on top of this mountain, where Christ becomes the one whom we look to, who we orient ourselves to, who gives us being. Originally, I had said I was going to do a message on storytelling, but then I saw it was Transfiguration Sunday, so I changed it. But I think I'd just like to close with a reflection on why story in this sense is important. Why the stories of the saints, the stories of Christian history, the stories in the Bible are the stories that give us our models, that give us images and pictures of those who have followed Christ, who have attempted to find their being in the face of this, the Son of God. And so in a culture where, especially just being on stage all week in improv and seeing how sort of we're all desperate sort of for meaning and for stories and for people to look up to and for people to help us to find a way, that it's so incredibly important, I think, right now in this moment to recover. To recover these stories, to recover the stories of our Christian past, of our church. I think of the story, just even as I walked past here on the wall, of the what's the famous guy he rescued?
Derek Wilms.
Yes, the story of Wilms is just incredible, right? This is the way that we become Christians, that we know what it is to be a Christian, is to know these stories and to sort of take these models. So, my chicken scratch is about, I'm trying to make sense of this, but I feel like I've gotten kind of carried away, but I don't know. Thank you for letting me come here and talk, and I guess we can maybe have a time where we reflect on this together now, if you'd like.